everyone, and welcome to episode 26 of the Home Hour podcast. This is the show where we talk about everything that goes on inside your home, parenting, kids, family life, food, basically everything that happens inside your four walls. I'm your host and author of the Happiest Home blog, Megan Francis. I've got a great show today. Later on, I'm going to be talking with the rookie moms, Heather Flett and Whitney Moss. And first up, I've got Kate Hanley, our resident wellness expert, back. Kate and I are going to be talking about dealing with the chaotic moments of parenthood, and she's got some great tips for us for how to deal with those moments without losing our cool. So I hope you enjoy Kate Hanley's bite-sized serenity tips. Hi, I'm here with Kate Hanley, our resident wellness expert. Welcome back to the show, Kate.
Thanks, Megan.
So nice to talk to you again. So today we are talking about the reality of many moms' lives in that we can get really stressed out. And we have, especially, I know in my house, I have certain pockets of the day where, like, for example, the time when all the kids get home from school and there's like about an hour, maybe an hour and a half of sheer chaos. It tends to feel that way at bedtime. There's definitely times during the day when I can recognize that I need to incorporate some kind of wellness strategies or even, you know, small things that I can do to bring some serenity into my life. So Kate is going to share with us some ideas for bite-size serenity, things that we can do in our everyday lives that are easy to do at home. You don't have to have special training, but that can take us from that very hectic place to a more serene place. So Kate, just launch into it.
Awesome. I just want to say, like, the whole thought of how that you have these concentrated moments of time, like bedtime and when the kids get home from school, I'm just sitting here nodding my head. It is so, it's like totally quiet or totally go time, I think. And yeah.
And it's hard to make that transition sometimes, you know, like it's always hard.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes it's like our resistance to the transition that makes it worse.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I definitely have a few tips that you can use. Some of them are better for those quiet times, and some of them you can do actually in the middle of the crazy times. I just want to point out before I launch into what these are, I mean, I feel a lot of times like people feel like if they want to be more zen about something, that it means that they just should totally not be bothered by anything and just walk around like with kind of a half smile on their face at all times. And I would just like to dispel that as a myth.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not even something to strive for. I definitely believe in getting quiet enough and slowing down enough to recognize when you are feeling like nicely satisfied with how things are going. And I think that that's something that we can forget to do. But just my point in sharing all these is so that you just have a chance to feel how you really feel. And sometimes how you really feel will be like quite irritated, but then it might give you the opportunity to say with your kids, like, I'm getting really frustrated right now. I need to take a time out or something like that. Okay.
All right. That's
just sort of my overarching umbrella approach.
Well, you mean you don't think that I'm walking around my house with like a little half quaalude smile on my face all the time? Come on now.
Which is anybody. I mean, I think that that's what people are saying.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
I need to get more zen or I need to be more relaxed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the first one that I want to start with is an acupressure point. And this is something that you probably want to do in those quieter moments, say when your kids are sleeping or maybe even when you're sitting in the car waiting to pick up the kids from school. Acupressure is DIY acupuncture. There are no needles involved. You just use your fingertips and you press on the same points that an acupuncturist would insert a needle in. And those points are just simply where your energy or your chi or your prana, if you're from a yoga background, run closest to the surface of your body. And there's a point in the very center of your breastbone. So the breastbone starts at the notch in your throat and then runs straight down to where your ribs come together, just above like the softest part of your belly, the solar plexus, where someone would give you the Heimlich. And in the middle of that bone, there's a soft spot. And it's right in between your boobs. It's right about at nipple height. I love that I get to say nipple on this podcast. And that is known as the Sea of Tranquility. And I just, first of all, I maybe if you don't even press it, but you just know that there is a point on your body that is known as the Sea of Tranquility, like you have tranquility within you and you can access it at any time. That may even help you in those moments when you can't, like, stick your finger in between your boobs. But you can just find that spot. If you feel around on your breastbone, like right in the middle there, you will find a tender spot. And that is what I am talking about. And you can use one or two fingertips to just apply gentle but steady pressure. This is not about going for the burn. You don't want to hurt yourself. Although if you find a spot that feels tender, that's probably it. You just are sending a signal to your body that you're like, I could use a little more tranquility right now. And it's located right in your chest, like right on your ribcage, which is where your lungs are. So it really encourages deeper breathing, which is simultaneously relaxing. As we all know, take a deep breath, calm down, but also energizing. If you're breathing more deeply, you're taking in more oxygen. It's a really good thing to do, like in those moments before the kids come home when you're kind of like, oh, geez, I'm tired. I don't know how I'm going to deal. Lovely thing to do.
Nice. I like it. And I love that you are giving us all an excuse to walk around. Too funny.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if anybody catches you doing it and they look at you like, what in the heck are you doing? You can just be like, I've got some heartburn.
Yes.
Something else that I like to do, I did this the other day and I did this actually in the morning. So morning is my hot spot for the day, just like trying to get the kids up, dressed, fed, out the door. Do the same for me too. I like to try and practice a little yoga, like 5-10 minutes on my yoga mat. Especially my husband and I trade off mornings when we get up with the kids. So especially those mornings when I don't get up and immediately go downstairs at 6:30, but I didn't get a chance to do that. The kids were just like pushing my buttons and dragging their heels. And I was like, I am running around like a crazy person. My practice today is going to be taking one sip of my tea very mindfully. I sort of hate the term mindful. I feel like it gets bandied around a lot. And what does it really mean? I like to think of it as just really tuning in to what you're doing. So completely letting yourself be absorbed by the physical sensations of whatever task you are undertaking. So taking a sip of mindful tea, I was literally running around with my tea mug in my hand. My tea was totally cold. Does this happen to anybody else? Like, my husband's like, why do you even make tea? Because I drink like 3 sips and then that's about it. But I stopped. I was in the middle of the hallway upstairs. I stood still. I felt my feet on the floor. I took a step just to notice that I was kind of leaning forward and hunched, and I stood up straight and I like felt the weight of the mug in my hand, and I took one sip where I like stayed with the sensation of the liquid going down my throat and into my belly. And it was just, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it was a heck of a lot better than running around like a crazy person. And then I got to walk downstairs a little bit more slowly. I got to kind of take in the situation of what my kids were up to before just going downstairs and being like, get your shoes on. You
know? Right, right, right.
You can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And anytime you can do that with anything, you could do it with driving. You could do it with pushing your kid on the swing. It's really just like, what's going on in my body? That's why I don't, that's another reason why I don't like the term mindful, because it seems like it's something that you have to think.
Right.
But to me, it's really more like tuning into your body.
And knowing, because I do feel like a lot of times when you're in those stressful, mornings can be that way here too. You're very reactionary. You're not really even paying attention to what's going on. You're just, you know, it's like the whole drill sergeant. I feel like I walk around like clapping my hands behind my kids, like, go, 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 you know. And sometimes I don't take the time to even pay attention to the fact that they are doing what I asked them to do already.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you give your, you switch your attention onto what you're doing, and it just builds in enough of a pause for you to be able to like take in what's going on instead of just projecting what you think is going on. It's a big shift in just a couple of seconds. And then honestly, in those moments when you're like not in reaction mode, like you were just talking about, then you create a little opening for some new idea to bubble up. Like, hey, why don't we put our coats on before we get our shoes on or something? You know, I don't know exactly what it would be, but you give yourself the opportunity to actually have something new come into your mind instead of you constantly pumping out the judgments.
Right.
This is not happening the way I want.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So something to do on those days when you're just dog tired and the kids are coming home or you're gearing up for dinner hour, or even after you put the kids to bed, really restorative for yourself is to lie down on the floor. Like, it sounds so simple, but lying on the couch kind of just contorts your body. You're typically just closing yourself off in kind of a little C shape. When you lie down on the floor, you're nice and long. Your abdomen has plenty of space. Your lungs have plenty of space. Your spine is supported in this really nice way about lying on your back. And if you really want to boost the the rejuvenating capabilities of lying down on the floor, put your shins, rest your calves, your shins on your coffee table. So when you elevate your legs, you make it easier for the blood to return from your feet to your heart. It gives your heart a little bit of a break. And think about it, that muscle is pumping 24/7. So anything you can do to give it a little bit of a break, it really appreciates. It's kind of like taking a nap without actually going to sleep.
Okay. So you're lying on your back with your feet. Basically, you're just getting your feet up in like a 90 degree, you know, your legs up in a 90 degree angle, then your feet are resting on the coffee table.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of looks like you're sitting in a chair if someone looked at you with their head tilted sideways. Yeah.
Well, isn't there, I know when I go to yoga class, there's, I'm trying to think of is it candlestick that you do at the end when all the blood drains back out of your feet into your body.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that's such an energizing, it's relaxing and energizing at the same time. It's funny that can, whereas really, like you said, laying on the couch is just tiring. Like,
makes you feel sort of like, oh God, I'm exhausted.
Right.
If you just say to yourself, I'm going to lie down on the floor with your legs up or not for 2 minutes, I guarantee you after those 2 minutes, you're going to be like, wow, I feel better. I feel different. I feel like, why don't I do that more often? So give yourself the experience of the benefits, and then it'll make it easier to remember to do it the next time. And while you're there, if you want to put your arms like up, kind of like cactus arms, you know, just your upper arms are extended straight out from your shoulders and your hands, your arms, your total back of your arm is resting on the floor, but you're just like getting your arms out and up above your head a little bit while you're resting there. Also a very nice chest opener, very gentle, helps you breathe more deeply and is like lifts the spirits, because if you're rounded forward, you're closing off your literal heart and also your metaphorical heart. So it's good to just kind of lie on the floor and just open up. Feels great.
Great. I'll try that.
Yeah. And something that you can do in the kitchen, so maybe you're waiting for the toast to toast or the pasta water to boil, is just a little bit of kitchen yoga. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. I like to just rest my hands on the counter, walk my feet back until my spine is totally extended and my feet are pretty much right under my hips, maybe a little bit behind them, and just try and see how long I can get my spine. It feels really good. So great for that neck and shoulder tension that we all carry so much of. It's really simple. It just takes a few minutes, but it completely changes the way you feel in your body. Also a really good thing to do, you can do it at the changing table. Like if you could build that stretch into every time you toast or every time you change a diaper, like that starts to add up to a big difference in your body.
Describe, because I know one thing I didn't realize I was doing for like about 5 years. Every time I would do a yoga pose that had me putting my arms above my head, I was hunching my ears.
Yeah.
So like I was concentrating so much on what my back was doing that I was actually introducing tension into my neck.
Right.
So kind of describe how that whole thing should look just for somebody who maybe hasn't made that realization yet.
Yeah. Okay. So anytime you're raising your arms above your head, or in this case, they're kind of above your head, but your torso and your arms are parallel to the ground. It's common to, like, if you're trying to reach, you're going to try and reach with your shoulders. You're going to lift, like, sort of instinctively, you're going to lift your shoulders up towards your ears. Like, if you're listening to this right now, lift your shoulders up towards your ears. It feels like crap.
Yeah.
So it's not really, that's a part of your body trying to do the work that it is actually not involved in the work at all. It's kind of like you're annoying coworker who's butting in on every project. It's your shoulders. So you want to think about creating as much space between the tops of your shoulders and your ears as possible. So your neck is nice and long and spacious. And the stretch then is actually coming from the back and like the sides of the body underneath the arms. If you lift your arm up right now, you could try and raise your fingertips higher by lifting your shoulder, but then drop your shoulder blade down and then see how much you can grow just by kind of lifting through the waist and the sides of the body. And it's, you have to sort of experiment and you have to tune into how you feel in your body. But if you do that, you can feel that the stretching of the rib cage and the spine and the muscles of the back that work so hard and get compressed over the day feel so much better than crunching your shoulders up to your ears.
Thank you. I just wanted that that visual for people because I know sometimes like I tend to get very caught up in what's going on in one specific part of my body and then I'm not paying attention to what's happening to the rest. And then I was like, why isn't this feeling as good as I think it should? So,
Yeah. You pretty much always want to be going for a nice long neck. So you can ask yourself like, how does my neck feel? Is it like completely, does it feel like a turtle in its shell or does it feel more like a swan?
I like that.
And then I just have one meditation technique that I would love people with. And this is totally meditation for dummies. This is after my second child was born, I gave up all forms of mind-body practice cold turkey because I felt like I just couldn't do anything that wasn't related to keeping those kids alive.
Yes.
And then my life spiraled downward
right.
So quickly. And this is how I found my way back in, is I would meditate while I was nursing him to sleep. And the meditation technique that I used is so simple. It totally works. It gives you a lovely focus. All you do is you count your exhales.
Oh.
And when you get to 10, you start again. So that's it.
That's it. I like that. Sometimes I feel like meditation is overly complicated or... there can be a lot of self-judgment that goes along with it too, you know, like
beating yourself up.
Right.
And you will definitely find all of a sudden you'll kind of remember what you're doing and notice that you're on 27. I guarantee you that's going to happen. And what I love is it just gives you something very tangible to start with again, number one, because that is the skill to me about meditation that is so important that it applies to everything in your life is that when you notice that you get off track, you just start again.
I like that.
Yeah. You don't beat yourself up. You don't quit. You don't go eat a bag of chips. You
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lovely metaphor for the rest of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Kate, we have to wrap up this segment, but this has been great. I love your tips for bite-sized serenity. Again, I will have links to all of Kate's information in the show notes for today. So you can check. I know you've got articles on your site about different things we've talked about today as well, I'm sure.
I do, and I have a whole book full of them too.
Oh, absolutely. So yes, we'll link to your book and all that stuff in the show notes as well. Until next time, talk to you later, Kate.
Bye.
Hey all, Megan again. I hope you enjoyed those tips on dealing with chaotic moments from our wellness expert, Kate Hanley. I know that I need to put them into use more often myself. I want to shift gears now to my interview with Heather Flett and Whitney Moss. They're creators of the Rookie Moms blog and author of The Rookie Moms Handbook, 250 Activities to Do With and Without Your Baby. Heather and Whitney are two of my favorite people online and have compiled so much wisdom about the experience of being a new mom on their site. So today we talk about lots of stuff, including how being a new mom is different today than it was just a few short years ago when I had a baby and so did Heather. Things are changing and we talk about how it's different nowadays to be a rookie mom than it was and how they're kind of dealing with that shift on their site. And we also talk about the decision to add more babies to the family or not, getting out of the house with kids, and so much more. So here's my interview with the Rookie Moms. Hey, Heather and Whitney. So glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Hey, you're welcome. Heather and Whitney, of course, you run Rookie Moms. And I want to give a little bit of background about the site because I think the three of us connected somehow when I started writing about newer mom issues. I had a baby. And at the time, I want to say you both either had babies or had toddlers or were pregnant with babies or maybe were both pregnant and had toddlers.
Definitely something like that. I remember reaching out to you because I thought, whoa, this is this great writer and she has a baby and she's writing all about being a happier mom, the happiest mom. And that is so in line with what we were thinking about. And I think at the time we had baby toddlers, like you said, and then older toddlers. So I reached out to you then and we've been following along with you since then. And I also read your organized book for babies, and I'm kind of stuck in the filing cabinet stage, but but did read it and like passionately absorbed it.
Well, it is a 52 week book. I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So you guys have, the site has of course evolved a little over the years and your children have gotten older, but it sounds like you're really renewing your focus on new moms, and you've got now contributors who have new babies. And you're doing a 52-week project with them, with the new contributors. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we always divided the site up into really small age groups. There's like the first 3 months and the second 3 months, and you can navigate by those chunks the next 3 months, because when I was a brand new mom, I was really addicted to reading parenting magazines, and there was so much content in those magazines I didn't relate to, because when you have a tiny baby that doesn't even move, discussions about stepping on Legos are just, you know, haha, that's funny mom jokes for moms of six-year-olds.
Right.
But that makes no sense at all when you have a baby that really just shifts from being on your chest to your car seat and a crib. So I felt like moms really want to hear about things that are exactly in the age group that they're in. So we've always done our content that way, and we came up with 52 activities for moms to do in their first year of motherhood, and all of them are designed to inspire moms to get out of the house, to do things they like to do, and to sort of take those first steps towards building confidence to live their lives with their babies in tow. So we published those 52 activities a couple of years ago, and then this year we invited 6 real rookie moms, so women who have just had their first babies, and even a couple, one of them just had her baby a week ago, and we've got one more expectant mom who will start shortly, and these guys are doing the adventures, and then they are sharing their experiences on our site so that readers who are in those same time slots of their baby's first year can really relate to their experiences.
I like that, because as we've just talked about, there is so much that you kind of forget really amazingly quickly after moving out of a motherhood stage. It's like you're so intently focused on whatever is going on right now that you know, so if I wrote a guide right now for a mom to take your baby to the zoo or take your baby to the mall, I feel like I would want to fact check it almost.
We kept feeling that way, and we were like, oh, are our references out of date because strollers now have headsets attached to them? What has changed in the world?
They power your iPad and they count your steps for you. Yeah. They fold themselves.
Yeah, there are some amazing new inventions that have happened in the last few years that really kind of affect new moms and their experiences. I think they're not as isolated as we were when the three of us all started our journeys in motherhood.
Yeah, but Megan, I have to say, you pretty much, not single-handedly, but you were on the team that talked me into having a third baby. And I read your book, The Happiest Mom, and it really made me think that, oh, the problem with having two kids is I'm just beating myself up, but if I had a third, I'd be way more laid back. So anyway, you and also my husband was involved, and I decided, okay, I'll have a third baby. It's going to be awesome, and I'll have all this fresh content to talk about for rookie moms. So it's just a win-win all around, and we don't need to tell him this. He's great for a lot of reasons.
But
baby. But like I said, you were on the team that made me think, like, yes, this is a totally good idea. So, but I did have the baby, and he's amazing and great and certainly cute for baby pictures on the site. What I realized immediately is, oh, this is not the same as having your first baby.
Oh, no.
I was already so self-identified with being a mom, mm-hmm. and I already had the gear, and I already had the expectations of, okay, this is really hard, but this will pass. And so my mindset was not really in the same place. So what I really love in reading our new contributors' stuff is they're just still really fresh and just right in it. And when Whitney and I have been finishing each other's sentences and sandwiches for 8.5 years now on the blog, and so this is just, these people, they don't have all the same preconceptions, and it's, I just love it. I want to drop the F-bomb. That's how much I love it.
That's a really good point, Heather, because I think that, and by the way, I think it's hilarious that I talked you into having a third baby. I hope it was the right decision for you.
I believe yes.
No, okay. No one will ever know.
Exactly. There's no way to
never
ever
know.
The
right decision.
But it is funny because, you know, my new mom years were really like 16 years ago, really was when I was in the thick of it. And, you know, it doesn't really matter how many times I've gone through motherhood since. It'll never be the same. I could have 5 more babies and no baby is going to be anything like that first baby was. So, and you get kind of, I don't want to say smug. That's not the right word. But you get a little flippant about it, I guess, after a while. Like, whatever. So it is good to have that. To have that reminder of what it's really like when it's so fresh and so everything is so important.
When you walk into a new mom and baby yoga class and you're really like looking around and all the other women with infants look like moms and you don't feel like you really are, you still feel like a poser.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
Where can I lay my stuff down? And what if I have to change a diaper? And all these anxieties are so real and you don't know, oh God, is this my whole life now? Mm-hmm. It's just like pretty intense. And I still really, really remember how intense that was. So I just love being able to express it through people who are actually experiencing it instead of just my dusted off memories.
Right.
Megan, did you get a chance to read the link I sent you of the story that the woman shared who took her baby to the grocery store for the first time?
I briefly read it over, but talk about it because that was one of the examples that we were talking about of how quickly
yeah.
you forget.
Well, maybe Heather, you should, because you're the one who we kind of built your first day without your husband, with your first baby around this grocery store mission.
I remember we built your first day. I was still pregnant, so I still knew everything about being a mom.
Oh.
Yeah. Whitney's first baby was born 6 months ahead of mine. And so by the time she had her baby, I was pregnant. And we have a kind of funny story about that. But I knew to watch. I knew to obsessively look at everything she was doing. And yet still I managed to not realize a baby eats more than 3 times a day because that's all the time I was with her. But when her husband went back to work and she had the baby, I remember we went to Andronico's.
Okay, that's our local grocery store.
Which is no longer a business. And we made a big deal out of getting one thing. But maybe the same thing had to happen when my husband went back to work
yeah.
6 months later. I don't even remember that because I was in a fog.
Well, so that became one of our challenges is go to the grocery store for just one thing, just to prove to yourself that you can do it. And it's sort of a dress rehearsal, go through all the logistics. And there's a few ways to do it. You can wear the baby. You can have the whole entire car seat inside the grocery cart. If you are walking, like you live in an urban environment, you could just put the one thing under the stroller. So we've shared this on the blog. And then this young woman who had a new baby had, her baby was 5 months old and she had never taken him anywhere by herself before.
Wow.
And so this was like kind of mind blowing for me, but also a reminder of how intimidating the world can be. Just the thought to have been able to avoid that task is also amazing.
High five for that.
Yeah.
From the perspective. How did she pull that off?
Well, she had groceries delivered and her mom watches the baby when she's at work. So after work, she can stop by the store before she picks up the baby. Anyway, so she described her challenge, which is quite funny because at the end she essentially shoplifts one item because she forgets where she's put it, and it's under the baby's blanket, which she discovers once she unloads him into the car.
And then, you know, how many times have I been in the position, although that's even more painful when you've got like a baby and a toddler or a couple of toddlers, where you realize you've done that, you've accidentally shoplifted and you get out to the car and you're like, I really want to do the right thing, but I just put these kids in their car seats.
Yeah.
There's been times I've gone home taking the kids home.
There's a point of no return. When everyone's buckled, I'm so sorry. I'll just give them an extra $5 next time.
I've actually returned items like the next time I went to the store and been like, unless, you know, not a perishable, but at Target, and said, you know, I accidentally walked off with this like a week ago. Yep. And I'm sorry, I just couldn't face coming back.
Yep.
So that's really funny. And you know, it's funny too, like just the different options that you just went through. They become such second nature after a while. Like, oh, okay, I can bring the car seat. And you get really good at making that snap judgment. Like, okay, it's a cold day. The baby's wrapped up in her blanket. I'm just going to take the bucket out and put it in the cart. Or it's a nice day. The baby's awake and happy. I guess I'll let her ride in the little orange car seat thing that's attached to the cart. And it's, or, you know, maybe it's a day I feel like wearing them. But when you're a really new mom, you feel like everything has to be kind of planned out for you. There's not that feeling like you can just go with it.
Again, that is so, so true. And I remember right before having my second baby, just kind of laying there in bed, imagining, probably on my side, but imagining all the different ways I could have the two of them strapped down, because they're less than 2 years apart. And I'm like, okay, so if they're both in the car, I'm, you know, like I'm in charge. No one's going to end up in the road. If I'm wearing one and strolling one, and I would go through these configurations, and I'm an engineer by training, so I almost can't stop myself. I need to optimize for every situation, which is so weird. I know, saying that out loud.
We also had a whole thing of like coming back in the house. Who do you bring in the house first? You put the baby in some kind of contained device, yes, an exercisor or the crib or whatever, and then go back out for the toddler, or vice versa. Well, you can't, because the toddler can't be running around the house.
And those are the logistics that come the third baby, you pretty much have down. There's no right. longer the, like, if I know I need two hands, then I'm going to be wearing a carrier. I might just wear the carrier all day, even without the baby. And that's just right. who I am now. And lots of those things just really do become second nature.
Well, and also I think that you start to, with the second and the third and beyond, there's things that seem so obvious when you have one baby. And it's kind of like, it's hard, but it's also easy in a way to follow the quote rules unquote. Like, for example, never leave your baby, you know, in the garage. Okay, great. Except if you have two and you have a bunch of groceries, what's worse, taking the baby out?
Say never wake a sleeping baby.
Right. Yeah. But am I going to take the baby out and put her in the house and then let her just like run amok while I bring the groceries in? Well, that doesn't, she's safer strapped in.
Yeah.
In the car. But then, you know, but then there's that feeling like, wait, but you're never supposed to do that. And it's, you find yourself sort of having to make your own decisions about things.
Yeah.
And that can be kind of hard when you're used to kind of following the rules the way that they've been laid out.
Well, and I do feel, maybe you agree, that when you have more children, it seems easier to have one. But I mean, nothing really rocked my world like having that first child, that like, now I can't take a shower. Now I can't go out and grab something from the store or walk in and out of the car like I used to. So I still do feel connected, like, even though I don't totally remember the details.
to the rookie baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't, now looking back, I think, oh my gosh, like when I had just one baby, he was so portable, I could take him anywhere, but I didn't, you don't learn that until you have something to compare it to.
Right.
So yes. At the time it felt like, man, everything just got really hard because it's not just me anymore. I have this other human being.
And the anxiety over how, once you leave the house, if the baby's going to cry, like that is,
yeah.
I think that is the fear that drives new moms to not go out, is they're afraid of public crying.
Yes. Oh, public crying, of course, is so stressful.
Yes. But of course, to mom of older children, it's like a newborn cry is the least offensive thing
it's
you've
like
ever
kind
heard.
Of cute.
Right.
It's kind of tragic cute when you hear a newborn cry. And then if it's not your kid crying, you don't have to deal. It's like kind of no big deal.
My husband and I love, you know, we're the people who, we travel now that our youngest is five. We travel together quite a lot without kids. And we love it when we hear babies crying when we're out, because we're like, they're not ours.
Exactly.
We get a real rush out of it. So it doesn't bother us at all. You know, something else that just popped into my head, another new kind of early motherhood experience I remember very clearly, actually two. The first one was that anytime I started remembering something that happened before I had kids, I would get this vaguely panicky sense, like, where was the baby? Like, okay, I'd be picturing, you know, this memory of myself walking down the street as a teenager or like in my college years or whatever. And then I think, but where was the baby? And then I remember, oh, you didn't have a baby then, remember? Yeah. But it was sort of like, I forgot what it was like not to have this other person completely dependent on me. Mm-hmm. And that was a big adjustment. And I also remember having this weird moment with my oldest where he was like 3 months old and I was looking at him, as I often did, because I had a lot of time. That is the nice thing about having one baby. You have a lot of time to gaze at them, right? So mm-hmm. I'm looking at him and all of a sudden it was like, I felt like I was looking at myself or something. It was this weird, like transcendent, bizarro experience that kind of honestly freaked me out a little bit. And I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like that or if you can even remember now, but that feeling of like being part of this child.
I don't know if I had that with an infant. My daughter looks very much like I did when I was her age. And so I've been sort of watching that since she was about two. And now she's doing some of the same activities that I was really into. So that is where I feel like I'm literally watching my inner child experience the joy of childhood over again.
Oh, that's neat.
Which is kind of like what that mirror moment just flashes on me occasionally. Like she's hanging from monkey bars and I feel like I'm watching myself in a video. A video that didn't exist, of course.
Right.
Megan, my only downfall or side effect from staring at my baby's faces for too long is then when I spend time alone with my husband, his head seems so big. And that just happens every time. I'm like, oh my God, your head is so big.
You used to always say that when you had a newborn, when you spend all day with a newborn.
Yes.
Your head is so strangely large, yet proportionate to your body, unlike a baby.
Yeah, right. That's true. But like, if you're in bed and they're covered up except for that huge head,
right.
The pillow.
You're like, you just look so strange. Oh, that's funny. So then, you know, I'm really curious now after this conversation we've been having about things that are different. And I don't just mean things that are different because we can't remember what they were like, but things that are actually different for moms today. And it sounds so silly. I mean, how old are your young? Like, your youngest can't be more than two or three, right, Heather?
My little one's 2.5, yeah.
2.5, and, okay.
But our oldest are about 9.
Right,
and
okay.
So the big difference between the youngest and the oldest is so much technology that's connecting us, right? I mean, the constant, you know, it, and some of it, like Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram, it feels like connecting technology, but in some ways I still just want you to go out and meet another real mom, like
right.
in person. I want you to leave your couch and not just chat with your best friend who had a baby in another city and you're on the same schedule and Skype is awesome and I love that too, but like go out and feel the sunshine and look at your baby and push the stroller and make awkward conversation with another mom doing the same thing. So I don't know if that is where you were going with that question.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, even 5 years ago when I had Clara, you know, we had a smartphone, but not everybody had a smartphone. I think I was on Instagram, or I think Instagram was around then, or it was just starting, but most people weren't. I mean, it was just, most people really weren't even on Facebook yet. So right. it has really changed. The experience really has changed over the last 5 years. And I have to imagine the technology, not just social media technology, but also infant technology has probably changed a lot too.
Yep. I think, I mean, people now expect to have a video monitor mm-hmm. that, you know, they watch their baby fall asleep, or if the baby is crying, they can check the monitor to see if its, you know, leg is sticking out or what the problem is. I think there's a lot of that, but there's the social stuff, the social media stuff, I think impacts people's behavior in a new way. One of the things that new moms on our site have told us is the expectation to have these like formal photo shoots. People get maternity photos taken, and then when baby's sitting up, they get photos taken. The baby's first steps, they get photos taken. And I'm just imagining a wall in somebody's house where it's like just in baby's first year, they have 7 different formal professional shots. Then once, if they're like you and have 5 children, how many images
can you have on the wall? But you can't keep that going. I mean, I feel like you'd said Clara just kind of realized that Jacob has like all of
the actual physical pictures, you know, the ones that are out.
Well, actually, I'm really lucky in that regard that Sawyer, my youngest, looks so much like Holden, my oldest, because he'll see pictures of Holden printed out and say, oh, that's me. I'm
that's so cute.
Not exactly.
Yeah, they are. Those two are pretty identical. They're just,
six years
apart. So it's easy to tell them apart now.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I remember when Jacob was a baby, I did feel to some extent a little bit of pressure to go get the, you know, studio pictures taken. And I took them at 3 months, and I want to say I took them at a year. And the difference was when I finally decided, okay, I'm not going to keep up with this. Like, I can't pay for this every 6 months. And besides, I was having another kid. There wasn't everybody else. First of all, everybody else I knew wasn't a quasi-professional photographer, which is something that's the internet has completely changed. It's like everybody has an amazing camera and knows how to take great pictures, it feels like now. And that's not even accurate, but it feels that way.
But that's what it feels like.
It does feel like that.
And if somebody does have their child's pictures taken, you see them. So you get this, it's sort of a skewed idea of what other people are doing, because everyone's going to post the most visually pleasing stuff from their life, because that's the way the internet has gone. And so I'm not even sure if that many other moms are doing all of the professional shoots. But it feels that way.
Like we have to, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you see if you see a few of your friends are doing it, then it makes you think, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do when my baby turns one.
Right.
And then, so then you do it, and then you post it, and then someone else who's 4 months behind you sees it and says, oh, I have to have a smash cake for my baby on his first birthday.
Right.
Because, you know, I saw three other people doing it, or I saw it on Pinterest. Yes.
All right. I'm going to give a word of warning so we can uplift ourselves.
Okay.
Maybe this is going to go the other way, though. So one of you should uplift us after I say my thing. When I was in college, the first year, I spent a lot of time in that lounge room watching TV. And I could always find somebody else to not study when I wanted to not study. But what I didn't realize is that the other people were studying the rest of the time. So it was really just me screwing around. And
right.
You can always find, like, people who are having their professional photos taken. But if the other 450 of your Facebook friends are not doing that, then
you don't notice.
You don't need to do it either.
You can't see people not doing something, right?
Yeah.
You just see
the smash cakes. And that was three of them instead of, like, everyone who turned
3 million.
One.
Right. That's a really good point.
Data-driven point.
Thank you for that. Why do we need uplifting? That wasn't down. I can get much more down than that if you want. You know, one other thing I was thinking of, and this, you know, is, I guess, I don't even want to say controversial, because I don't really like controversy that much. But one thing that I actually have noticed is that I feel like if I was a brand new mom right now, simply the act of logging into Facebook would probably result in me feeling defensive 3/4 of the time, because there's so much vague ranting going on, and I've been guilty of it. But I think people fail. Like, when you vaguely rant about something, here's an example. So I think it was Fisher-Price came out with that baby seat that had an iPad mounted on it.
Uh-huh. I posted about it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was vaguely. Not... thrill. I didn't
not vaguely.
See your post, so I'm going to talk, and I won't even know what your opinion is.
Yeah,
then,
no
okay.
problem.
I wasn't a big fan. I mean, I was like, that's dumb. Whatever. I didn't really think too much about it. Does a baby need to have an iPad mounted on their bouncy seat? Probably not. Moving on. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But then I started to see it with things like parents should be taken out and shot. People should have their parenting licenses revoked. And all I could think was, you know, people are bringing up babies and toddlers in a time where there are a million baby apps. I mean, it's become an expected part of childhood, regardless of what the AAP says. Everybody knows that most kids are not waiting until they're two to have screen time. I mean, let's just get real here. Whether it's on a car trip or, you know, every now and then or every day. And so I just thought to myself, okay, yeah, is this sort of ridiculous in my opinion? Yes. Is this level of vitriol required? And I don't know. I don't think so. It felt to me like such an over-the-top, judgy perspective, especially mostly from older parents. And that was what kind of made me mad about it, was that it was people who, it's very easy for us to say we would never do that. But is that even true? I don't know what it's like to be a brand new mom today. So anyway, you guys take it. What do you think? What was your post?
Well, before I talk about the screen bouncy seat thing, I hear people say this, what you're saying, that they don't like Facebook because there's so much fighting or negative energy. I don't really experience that myself. And I was very aware of that Fisher-Price bouncy seat, but I didn't see a lot of crazy kind of over-the-top reaction to it. So that aside, my experience of Facebook is not one of a lot of crazy town ranting that turns me off to that space. But the bouncy seat, you know, I thought that's terrible because it's encouraging parents of really young children to use the screen immediately.
Right.
But I really wasn't thinking about the bounce. I was thinking about the bouncy seat as something you really use in kind of the first 6 months. And I think it actually is big enough that, and if it has this iPad thing, maybe maybe an 18-month-old would sit in it, which is kind of a game changer for me in terms of judging that.
Interesting, because my 2.5-year-old will sit, when the big boys are watching like Clone Wars, he'll sit with the iPad and watch something more age appropriate, and he does sit there, but I wonder if he's a little bit younger, if I'd be afraid he would drop it, and thus, I don't know, that lockdown experience seems crazy.
Well, that, you know, the thing to me, and don't get me wrong, I think it's ridiculous to put a baby in a seat and basically force them to stare at a screen.
Yeah,
it is ridiculous.
It really seems like lockdown. I agree with
that. But I could totally see how you might end up with that product for a variety of reasons. And it's interesting that you don't have that experience on your Facebook, because I have to imagine we are in a lot of the same social circles.
Yes, I would agree.
Perhaps if I did a little careful editing of my Facebook feed, you know, I think that sometimes it's a case of a vocal minority. Mm-hmm. And what I, for some reason, and I'm not sure if this is because I've gotten mad and interacted with them in some way, but I feel like the vocal minority keeps getting bumped to the top of my feed over and over. And so it can start to feel a little like, I don't know, like overload. Uh-huh. And most people aren't trying to be mean. It's not like they looked at someone and said, "Hey, you, Katie, you're a bad mom." It was more like, but it's
any
this.
Any mom who did this is stupid.
It's this general judgment. Yeah. And when you are, especially when you're a new mom, it does not feel general. It feels targeted. It feels like someone's pointing a finger at you. And so it was kind of funny that I almost felt myself wanting to go to bat for parents using a product I thought was ridiculous. Because I was almost, I felt like I was almost driven to it by the reactions that I saw. And that's not the first time that's happened to me. So
yeah, I get that. Yeah. Somebody commented on the post that I wrote, you know, it's 2013 or 2014, screens are here, get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, maybe I need to get used, like maybe this is a young mom who's shaking me by the shoulders and saying, this is the way it is. And maybe it's, you know, it is important, I think, to be open to that the world changes and you can't hold on to your 1980s fashions forever.
Right. If a baby literally grows up from breastfeeding onward, when you're holding your smartphone in your hand, mm-hmm. thumb checking Facebook while nursing,
yeah.
who are they not to be like, what's that? I want one too.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And I have to say too, like, I remember when those baby Mozart videos were big, you know, in the 90s or the mm-hmm. 90s or the 2000s. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember. And I remember being around moms who would put it on their large screen television and then drag their baby in on a bouncy seat and let them watch it so they could take a shower or wash the dishes. And I mean, is it different? A little bit.
Right, right. That's but a good question.
It's practically different, but in theory, it's kind of the same thing. It's the baby's not looking away, you know. There's this huge screen in front of it and it can't really turn its head that well. It's kind of just staring. Yeah. So, you know, it's easy, I think, for us to say, like, this is different, or this, you know, we're shaking our canes.
Yes. Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn, kids. But sometimes things aren't that, they're just a different version of something that we did, too.
So that's really funny that you say that, because I feel like if a mom feels like she has to get the baby in front of an iPad to get some sort of social or cognitive advantage, I would say, oh my gosh, no, you're fine. Don't even worry about it. Give your baby paper cup and, like, you're fine. But if instead a mom feels like she has to do it in order to get a shower or laundry or a nap or whatever, then we want to be so supportive of her choices and say, good for you, mom. Good for you finding out what works. My baby slept in his swing for like 4 months or maybe 6 until he could unbuckle it and turn it off himself. I mean, so like, you got to do what you got to do. And we support all moms and their choices in that regard.
Right. Well, it's funny. There are things that are controversial that you wouldn't even know. I don't remember now what I wrote a story for maybe Babbel or something. And I was talking about when you go to a party and you have a baby and you don't know what to do with them. So you remember that? Like, you'd go there and then the baby falls asleep and you're like, do I just carry the baby around all night? Mm-hmm. Like, what do mm-hmm. I do now? And one of my suggestions was to let the baby finish out its nap in the car seat. And like two people jumped down my throat, were like, you should never give that advice. Like, babies have died in their car seats. And I thought, this is a thing? Like, I had no idea sleeping in a car seat, which, by the way, they sleep in the car in their car seat.
Yep.
Oh, my second baby slept in his car seat for months.
There you go.
Yeah.
That was his bed.
That was his thing.
Well, apparently this is a problem to some people. Yeah. And I had no idea. But like the love. And then I felt all guilty. Like, man, should I have known this? But when I went online and searched for it, it seems like, some, you know, kind of a. Let's just say it's not like 9 out of 10 doctors agree. Okay. So it wasn't as much of a thing as this person was making it out to be. But there was that, even though it wasn't, I wasn't even talking about my own baby. I was like, oh my gosh, what did I say? What did I do wrong? There's mm-hmm. so much of that feeling of like every decision is so fraught mm-hmm. with importance.
That totally reminds me of a party that was at your house, Heather. I think it was a Hanukkah party. And it was at your apartment. And there was a baby on the floor. It was Anna. And mm-hmm. she was about crawling age. And she was the only baby in town, essentially, uh-huh. in our social circle. And then another friend looked at her crawling on the floor where people were almost tripping over her because they were so unfamiliar with having a baby around. And a friend said pretty rudely, if I had something that was the most precious item I owned, I wouldn't put it on the floor in the middle of a party. And I would so love to ask that friend now has a 1.5-year-old. I would love to ask her what she's been doing with her baby since she goes to parties.
Oh, my gosh. And that, you know, that's even harder. Like, at least when they're a baby, they can't go any – like a little baby, they can't go anywhere. But then when they get to be that sort of mid-aged, when they're crawling around immobile, what do you – you know – put them on your shoulders and make them sit there the whole night. It's there are no easy answers, I guess, is the point. And we all
that's why
could,
it's so hard to yes. go to do your normal stuff when right. you have a baby.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably why I just tend to err on the side of compassion, because even if something hasn't happened to me yet, you know, goodness knows. And if there's something that I've managed to bypass with all five of my babies, I'll probably get it with a grandbaby. So,
mm-hmm. yes. You know. I guess that's why motherhood is so humbling.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, ladies, we are past the half hour mark. This has been one of those conversations that just flies by. I want to make sure that we talk about anything exciting that might be going on your site. I know you talked about the 52 projects, but talk about those again, because I just want to make sure we understand that, you know, when listeners hang up here, they can go check it out right away. Where do they find it on the site? Is it just like mixed in with the regular posts, or?
So on our homepage, we have a red badge jumping out at you with 52 weekly challenges.
Okay.
And it's for new moms specifically, and you can jump in at the right age of your baby or pick and choose what seems fun based on your mood, the weather, your companions. And you can always try stuff for older or younger babies, but we tried to make it just so that, you know, week one is not too hard. We're easing you towards baby steps, and week 52 is for an older age baby. So that's how we structured it, but do it how you like. Make it your own.
And then every Monday we do put one of those in the sort of the main editorial space on the site, and then sometime later in the week we share somebody else's specific experience that they have written for us with actually doing one of the challenges.
And if you love it, if you hate it, if you modified it, we're totally excited. And you can tag anything, hashtag Rookie Moms on Instagram or Twitter, and it'll get our attention. We share the love.
That's awesome. All right. And I will definitely link to that in the show notes as well. And some of the other things that we talked about today, like the blog post about the Fisher-Price baby screen forcer and other things that we discussed today. This has been great, guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us. Bye, Megan.
Thanks. Bye. Okay, everyone, that's it for this episode of the Home Hour podcast. To find out more about my guest today, just head over to the show notes. They're at thehappiesthome.com/episode26. And if you want to find all the episodes in one place, just go to thehomehour.com and it'll forward you to a list of all the previous episodes. I love hearing from you all, so please feel free to shoot me an email at podcast@thehappiesthome.com if you have suggestions for guests or want me to answer your questions in a future show. I would love to hear from you. Okay, that's all until next Thursday. Until then, thanks for letting me spend some time with you this week, and best wishes from my home to yours.